Okay, the next argued case is number 21-1489, YC Rubber Company of North America against the United States. Mr. Steele.
May it please the Court. This case primarily concerns one key issue, the question of whether the Commerce Department may rely upon only one calculated margin determining the all others rate for several companies in anti-dumping administrative reviews.
Can I ask you just to begin with a kind of more of a less a housekeeping matter, which I would ask like the input from the other side on when they get up to, which is assume hypothetically we were to agree with you on issue one. What happens then? A remand and the Commerce Department gets a do-over, correctly applying, in your view, the statutory provision?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
And my second part of that question, so you can deal with both, is what happens? There are four issues raised in this case. What happens to the other three issues? Are they gone? Are they still alive, in particular issue four? Can we resolve that based on this, or does that go along with the remand?
Thank you, Your Honor. First, to answer the first question, yes, Your Honor, we believe that the correct thing for this court to do would be to reverse and remand to the Commerce Department, first the CIT, with an instruction. The Commerce Department should look at the record before it and select a second mandatory respondent. And that's required, Your Honor, as we put forward in our briefs, in order to calculate the all others rate pursuant to Section 1673 DC5. That's not what Commerce did in the administrative review before this court and the trial court below. With respect to your second question, Your Honor, I had planned to focus primarily on the first argument today. However, I do think that this court's remand would also take into account our second argument, which really is a question, Your Honor, of whether the calculation of one rate is representative of all the exporters and producers.
Well, for purposes of just what we have to do on this appeal,
yes,
do issues two, three, and four, I'm sorry, do issues two, three, and four disappear, or at least for the moment disappear, in terms of what we resolve and remand if we agree with you on the statutory construction issue?
No, Your Honor, I do not believe they do. I believe issue two would be resolved, which is what I would call the representativeness argument, pursuant to, for example, this court's a precedent in Albemarle. However, issue three has to do with whether or not certain producers or exporters should have been rescinded entirely. And that, as this court very well knows, is pursuant to this court's holding in Glycine and Moore, in which this court said it was not, that the previous interpretation of its own regulation was not reasonable, Your Honor. And we put
forward. But if we've already vacated what was done below in the first instance, I don't want to take too much of your time. I guess I'm just not seeing how two, three, and maybe four are still alive for purposes of our needing to decide on appeal if we agree with you on issue one.
Yes, sir, I would have the same concern. It would seem to me that if we ruled in your favor on issue one, two and three would go away. Perhaps we'd have to look at four, but it would seem that two and three would go away.
I just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing, Your Honors. The issue three that I would refer this court to is the question of whether there should have been rescission with respect to certain producers' exports. So they would have been out entirely of the review. So there wouldn't be a question, Your Honor,
right. Whether
they would have even, you know, gotten a rate at all. And so that issue, pursuant to this court's holding in Glycine and Moore, as we suggested in our briefs, that issue, I think, should also be decided by this court. And that is, you know, if rescission was going to be done by the Commerce Department, and we agree that they have a reasonableness standard there, they were supposed to look, in terms of this court's interpretation under Glycine and Moore, at one, whether or not the parties knew the previous rates ruling, and they did not at the time. Second, whether or not some expenditure of resources had been carried out by the Commerce Department. And it's clear in the record before this court and the trial court below that there was, in fact, no expenditure of resources. The parties had submitted what was required of them, which was a so-called separate rate certification, Your Honors, but there were no supplemental questionnaires issued by Commerce. No further work was required of the Commerce Department in order to assess whether rescission should be granted. And so for that reason, we had asked that on those specific issues, the parties that submitted rescission requests, that should be reversed and remanded, and Commerce should be instructed to look at the record again and determine whether or not rescission should be granted for those parties who requested rescission. And so I think that issue, unfortunately, Your Honor, cannot be decided by the statutory question. I do want to focus on that, Your Honor, which is, as I started off, I believe that Section 1673 DC5 requires, in the plain text, that you have to look at the weighted average of the estimated weighted averages.
Okay, just because time is short, let me get to the rub. One thing that bothers me about your request for reversal is that you had notice of the withdrawal, and there's an opportunity for you to come in and protest their decision, and you waited till the end afterwards to protest. So if you had come in earlier, at least it would have saved a lot of expending of resources if you had challenged it early on. I assume it looks like all we lawyers think, well, you were waiting to see the results and going to only challenge it if you didn't do it well. That's because that's what we do. But why didn't you? What other reason is there for you not to have protested their decision to proceed like 2 weeks in?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, there's no indication that we failed to exhaust remedies or anything like that in this case. We clearly timely filed our briefs raising the issue. I also want to point out that in some cases before this court, it may be true that separate rate respondents or the all other respondents do nothing. That's not the case in this case before this court. And that's because separate rate or all other respondents had to submit, as I said earlier in response to Judge Shaw's question, a separate rate certification or a separate rate application. That was required 30 days after the initiation of the review pursuant to the government's instructions. And as part of that, Your Honor, and this is in Appendix 164, it says explicitly in that application, and I'm going to quote, there is the possibility that your firm may be selected as a mandatory respondent, Your Honor. So everybody knew, all the companies knew that submitted these separate rate certifications and applications. They had already put their hands up, Your Honor. They had already signaled to the Commerce Department, pursuant to the Commerce Department's instructions, that they were willing to be selected. There was no reason why we needed to go in again and say, hey, me. No, Your Honor, we had already completed our obligations timely, pursuant to the Commerce Department's instruction, and certified to the department that we were willing to be selected as a mandatory respondent. So the question then became whether Commerce would go back, as it does in countless cases. I believe in a footnote in our brief, we listed many, many cases, Your Honors, where the Commerce Department routinely selects another response. So this is not a first of its kind occurrence. Commerce does this almost, in many, many cases. They go and they select mandatory respondents based on a list that they have already compiled. They have the data before them. There's nothing more they need to do than go to the list and pick the next company. And we had already put up our hands, Your Honors, and said, yes, we're willing and able to be selected. And I think it's very important, Your Honors, that if you look at the way the statutory construction is, there are two different obligations that are in play here that we've laid out in our briefs. The first, as I was talking about before, is the text of 1673 DC5. And then you also have the text of 1677 F1C, which has to do with the selection of the respondents themselves. Both of those talk about the selection in the plural, exporters or producers. Both of those have statutory context and structure that also support that we're talking about multiple respondents. And then the nail in the coffin for me, Your Honors, is the statement of administrative action, which the Congress said was the way in which this ought to be determined. The statement of administration action likewise talks about exporters or producers. It talks about multiples. It doesn't say Commerce may pick only one. So I think from the very history of this statute, going back to when it was enacted in order to create this provision, and by the way, it's also consistent with the preference of Congress in other places, which is Congress said, Commerce, you could calculate rates for all the producers and exporters. And then it said only in this exception should you have this limitation. So from the SAA, which is the executive, Congress's own view of the statute, through the text and through the statutory structure and context, all these indications suggest that Commerce erred in only selecting one mandatory respondent. And for those reasons, Your Honor, we respectfully request that this court reverse and remand. If there are no other questions, I'll save my time for rebuttal.
Well, I guess I have a little bit of a follow-up question, which is one of the government's responses to the argument you've just made is there this other statutory provision that says you don't have to construe all S's as plurals necessarily found in the statutory text. So why would that general requirement on how you construe statutes not apply in this context?
Yes, Your Honor. And the trial court also raised the question of the Dictionary Act, Your Honor. But I would like to point out the Dictionary Act specifically says there may be instances in which a plural could be considered to be a singular. We don't dispute that. But you have to look at the context of the statute. And here, as I said, the overarching purpose of the statute, as this court has said, and going back to 1990 in Roan-Palahniuk, is to have fair and accurate determinations of dumping margins. It wasn't the intention of Congress that you'd only have one company to be used, for example, for 42. And that's why they used producers and exporters. That's also, Your Honor, why the statute, 1673 DC5, talks about the weighted average of the estimated weighted average estimated margins. In my view, Your Honor, it's nonsensical to have a weighted average of only one firm. The whole point of a weighted average is you have X over here and Y over here, and you're trying to figure out what the weighted average should be, something in between X and Y.
Can I ask
Congress
you one final question?
Word.
I got your answer. One other final question, and it's more for the other side, but I'll give you a crack at it, which is, I assume this happens a lot. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I don't play in this particular field. But, I mean, is there a general practice that the Commerce has exhibited in past instances, one way or another, where one of the two drops out, or at least early on in the process? I don't remember if in the briefs parties got into that, but
that's right. You're right. It does happen fairly often, and I certainly look forward to learned counsel's response to your question. We listed in a series, in a footnote, many, many cases in which this exact thing has happened. And what does Commerce do? 2 weeks before, they had a list of all the producers and the exporters. They had gone to customs. They had collected data. So they had done their diligence. They had the data before them, and what they usually do, they pick another company, and they do it very quickly. For some reason in this case, they decided not to do that, and that's exactly what we believe was incorrect, and that's exactly why the decision ought to be reversed and remanded below, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll say the balance of my time. Rebuttal.
Ms. Akers.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'll start with the first issue that counsel was just discussing as it relates to whether Commerce has a continuing mandatory obligation to examine and determine the weighted average dumping margin on two mandatory respondents. The statute speaks to picking a reasonable number. There's nothing in the statute that infers, suggests, let alone explicitly and unambiguously states that Commerce has this continuing obligation. Here, Commerce did, in fact, select two mandatory respondents initially, and one dropped out.
Well,
and
if you're looking at the technical words of the statute, it says a reasonable number of exporters or producers. In other words, the plural. The reasonable number doesn't seem to suggest at all one, that a reasonable number is one, where it's followed by exporters in plural or producers in plural. Is that a fair reading of the text?
Your Honor, it's fair that it is stated in the plural, and we have a few responses to that. First, Your Honors are aware of our Dictionary Act response. Exactly. Moving on from that, the statute itself, in looking at the context, this contemplates that only one mandatory respondent will be left. In subsection B, right under that, Commerce is directed to, or excuse me, this is subsection A. Commerce is directed to average the weighted average dumping margins, excluding any zero, de minimis, or margins based on adverse facts available. So it's certainly conceivable under the plain language of the statute that Commerce could be determining the weighted average based on only one mandatory respondent. And to Your Honor's question to counsel,
how do you do weighted average for one?
Well, Your Honor, you take the number plus zero and divide it by itself. I mean, it's as the trial court explains, there's no requirement that you have to average multiple numbers. And similarly, under
but
subsection...
there's no real task of averaging if there's only one.
Fair,
right?
Your Honor, but if you go to subsection B right under that, if all of the mandatory respondents come away with zero rates, Congress directed Commerce to average the zero rates. So to Your Honor's point, sure, really you don't do any math because you're just taking the average of one, but Congress contemplated that same scenario under subsection B when it directed Commerce to average all zero rates. It's really not doing any work.
Well, it's a little different in my mind, right? It's a little different to say averaging meaning you're dealing with more than one, but to contemplate that, yeah, if you have six respondents and they're all zero, what do you do then? To me, there is some averaging and there is some need for explaining how you do that. To me, that's a little different from assuming that Congress was thinking about just one person when it talked about averaging. But that's just my view.
Fair, Your Honor. And to Your Honor's earlier question, this happens all the time. It is not at all uncommon for a mandatory respondent to drop out at the end. If Your Honors were to adopt appellant's argument here, what would happen is we would get to the very end of this review period, a mandatory respondent would drop out, and then Commerce would be statutorily obligated to start over, go all the way back to the beginning. This does not comport with the context of the statute. Commerce has very strict statutory deadlines that it must adhere to. It would essentially be impossible for Commerce to administer the statute and adhere to its deadlines if it constantly had to go back to the starting point. And
but
I think it's a...
When they dropped out, their point is there was plenty of time to bring in another producer. So when you say it's common for people to drop out, you can see that the small producers do. But the question, which I've had from the beginning, it always seemed to me that the government's best, strongest argument was that the entity that they kept was the largest producer, the largest exporter. And you never make that argument. And so obviously, from the government's viewpoint, there's no strength to it. Would you comment on that?
Yes, Your Honor. It was the largest producer by volume, and that's why Commerce initially selected.
But they never say that.
I believe they
say
that.
And the government never argues that. You inform us that they were the largest, but that not with any relationship to why you decided, all right, we don't need anyone else, never mind the statute, which certainly asks for a weighted average. You can't get an average with only one.
Well, to Your Honor's point, Commerce initially selected the mandatory respondent that it ended up using because it was the largest by volume, and that's why it selected
it.
But
you never argue that in the briefs.
I believe, Your Honor, we point to the statute subsection B, which is the largest volume, the largest respondent by volume, so perhaps we could have been more explicit in that.
But you never draw the conclusion that therefore this is deemed representative, don't bother me with all these small producers.
Well,
that's ignored, which convinces me
okay,
that it's not deemed persuasive.
Well, to Your Honor's question about being representative, our response to appellant's argument there is that there's no requirement in this subsection of the statute for there to be a representative dumping margin. Appellants point to subsection B, and they look at the Arbemarle case, which is under that subsection, and the legislative history, which speaks to representativeness. But there's no legislative history that speaks to representativeness in the subsection we're dealing with. There are no cases.
Then you have an excessively unfair statute. They have to be representative. They're going to come up with a value which everyone is going to be stuck with.
Well, it's representative, Your Honor, in that we selected the largest volume importer. So it's presumably representative, which is what this court explained in Albemarle. But there's no additional work that Commerce has to do to explain that the margin is representative.
The government never says they're representative. I could see before the other guy dropped out, they picked the two largest. Then they might have been able to come up with that argument. They never say that this entity is representative.
Well, that's because, Your Honor, our position is that there's no statutory requirement that there needs to be a representative margin.
Do you have presidential support for that curious argument?
Well, Your Honor, the support is that there is nothing in the statute that speaks to representation or representativeness, and there are no cases that we are aware of or that appellant has cited that says that the average weighted dumping margin needs to be representative under this subsection. There's just no authority whatsoever. So although appellants are arguing that they wish it was representative and it's not fair because it's not representative, they cite no authority other than cases that speak to a different part of the statute. And so to Your Honor's point, fair, we didn't argue it was representative because it's our position, but there's no requirement that it needs to be representative. And when we think about how this would actually be in play if Commerce were actually required to go back to the very beginning and restart the entire review. This argument that appellants raise doesn't really comport with their second argument, which is that Commerce essentially has no discretion whatsoever to deny a withdrawal request, even if it's, like in this case, 9 months into or beyond the 90-day deadline. So on one hand, appellants are arguing we should be able to withdraw at any time, even after the preliminary results are issued. But if someone withdraws, like a mandatory respondent, Commerce is statutorily obligated to go all the way back to the start and select new mandatory respondents. It would be impossible for Commerce to do this and comply with its statutory deadlines. So you really can't have it both ways here.
Ms. Akers, could I ask you two questions, please?
Sure.
One is a process question. One is on the merits. You recall that when your colleague on the other side was up, Judge Prost asked about possible outcomes and what we had to address. My view is if we affirm the decision of the Court of International Trade in this case, we then, on the first issue, we then have to look at the second, the third, and the fourth issues. That's my view. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that, Your Honor. If the first issue is affirmed, then whether the parties can be withdrawn would be important to know whether that applies. And then the fourth issue goes into the right as well. So
okay,
I agree.
Now, assume that we were to agree with the other side, with the appellants on the first issue, and say that the CIT erred on that. Do we then need to reach the second, the third, and the fourth issues?
As to the second issue, I think no, Your Honor, because the application of the rate isn't really important if the rate itself didn't stand. Right, and so I think that would go away. To Your Honor's question to my colleagues over here, if that were to happen, what would the result be? Well, Commerce would have to restart the entire review. It would have to go back to the very beginning and pick another mandatory respondent, hope that it stays involved all the way till the end, and if it doesn't, we'll continue to have to go.
Now, how about the withdrawal
to
issue?
To the withdrawal issue, I think that also should be determined by this court, because when it goes back down and there's a rate applied, there will still be a question of whether that rate is applied to these parties or whether they're improperly not allowed to withdraw. So I think that needs to be
decided.
But if
it went back, wouldn't the whole thing, if it did go back, wouldn't the whole thing start all over again and everybody would be sort of, for want of a crude term, back at the starting line? And why, I mean, I would think everybody, if it went back, everybody would be, okay, now we're going to have a new second mandatory respondent, and we now decide what we want to do. Wouldn't they be getting, for want of a better word, a do-over on that issue automatically?
Yeah, Your Honor, that's a good point, and I actually didn't think that. I think that's right, because the timeline to withdraw would presumably start over if the entire review were to start over. So that was my answer,
okay.
And I think that's correct.
Okay. So you would say two and three we wouldn't have to look at. Now, on four, my initial reaction was that if we were to rule in favor of appellants on the first issue, four would still perhaps be alive because there's still the question of the surrogate values with respect to, is it Jun Rong or Jun, whoever it is here?
Yep, I understand.
Jun Hongs.
I think you're right, Your Honor, that it would be helpful if the court were to decide that issue, because that issue will remain as to whether Commerce properly excluded the import data.
Okay, now my one substantive question, then I'll turn the floor over to my colleagues, was I saw reference in a case, and I could be wrong, that it was not unreasonable in a situation like this for somebody to wait. If the results of the prior review were not yet in, mm-hmm. it was all right for somebody to wait and then challenge after the results of the prior review came in. Now, as I see it here, on March 9th, 2018, Commerce issued the final results from the first review.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then in this case, I'm trying to see how long after that was it that the parties sought to challenge?
6 months after, Your Honor.
Okay.
And
so,
to Your Honor's point, you're recalling the Glycin case from this court.
Yeah.
In that case,
didn't seem to me to be too long a time.
Agree completely. In that case, this court explained that it importers might have an interest in knowing what the prior segment's final results were, and if those results don't come out by the time their 90-day expiration period comes up, then maybe Commerce would unreasonably deny any withdrawal requests.
No, I'm not talking about the withdrawal requests. I'm talking about challenging the failure to select a second mandatory respondent.
Oh, okay. Apologies, Your Honor.
No, I didn't make it clear.
Same argument here. They waited forever, right? In a lot of these cases...
How long did they wait until after the results of the first review came in?
It was months. I can't remember off the top of my head, Your Honor. And Your Honor spoke about this with the other side, is that this happens all the time. People drop out, or mandatory respondents drop out. And oftentimes, the reason why Commerce replaces them, like appellants mentioned, is common, is because the other parties mention it. They request that they be reviewed. They request that Commerce replace them. Or they can write a letter saying that they think Commerce has the obligation. Here, appellants argue that Commerce is statutorily obligated to proceed with two mandatory respondents. But it begs the question, if that is such an unambiguous statutory mandate, why none of the parties raised this issue until after they found out that the preliminary result rate wasn't going to be favorable for them. And that's the exact reason why Commerce needs to have this discretion and why parties shouldn't be rewarded for waiting until the very end, for waiting to see that a rate isn't helpful for them, even though Commerce has expended all of the resources and time into this review that was originally with two mandatory respondents.
Can I go back to, it seems like forever, but I think it was just a few minutes ago where you were concluding your arguments, and you were talking about withdrawal, and you were talking about a panoply of horribles. I don't mean that pejoratively. I use those too. About this case, and you were dealing with requests for withdrawals. That's a separate issue, though. I mean, that's issue three, right? I mean,
correct.
We could disagree. I mean, whether or not we can reach it or not is another issue. But in terms of the legal issues, we have the ability to decide. We could decide for the other side on the statutory construction and still decide that you were right, that they can't, that the Commerce does have the discretion to agree to or not agree to untimely withdrawals. So to the extent that's one of the parade of horribles that might appear, that's not going to be affected necessarily by our decision on the statutory construction. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair, Your Honor. And that would just be reaffirming the Gleason case. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, any more questions? Thank you. Mr. Steele.
Thank you, Your Honors. I wanted to address Judge Newman's question about representativeness. First, Your Honor, I want to make clear that that is a secondary issue. The first issue, consistent with Judge Prost's questions today, is whether or not the statutory text, the context, and the structure, as well as the statement of administrative action, as I said, are clear. All of those things point to the idea that Commerce must have two calculated rates in order to determine the all others rate.
Isn't it, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but isn't it a little odd that this issue hasn't presented itself before?
Well, Your Honor,
this does happen all the time. I mean, we all agree this happens a lot, so what?
Your Honor, I wanted to answer your earlier question with a little more precision. You had asked whether it does happen. I wanted to point you to note 7 of our opening brief. We enumerated 8 cases, and those cases are all situations in which my government colleagues went ahead and selected another mandatory respondent. So the reason why we haven't been here before, Your Honor, is because Commerce goes ahead and selects a second respondent. So we don't need to end up in a situation where we only have one. And I would point out, Your Honor, that the basic purpose of the statute is actually to have all, I repeat, all the producers and exporters have a calculated margin. So under the statute, Commerce is actually, first and foremost, supposed to select individual margins for everybody. Here, for some reason, they only picked 2, and then when one dropped out, they couldn't pick another one. So, you know, they should be picking 3, 4, or 5 to make sure that they don't end up in a situation. The burden is on Commerce. There seems to be an attempt by the government.
You're not suggesting that we're going to construe the statute as saying it has to be more than 2.
I don't think it's up to you to require that, Your Honor. It's up to the Commerce Department on an individual basis in each case to make sure that at the end of the day, they have two or more rates. That's what the statute says in the plain text. That's what it says in the context and the structure. And that's what the Statement of Administrative Action instructs.
Well, that assumes that there is more than one representative out there, right? I mean, to Judge Newman's point.
Yeah, I mean, Your Honor, I do not believe that one can be representative. And that's, again, going back to the structure of the statute and to Judge Prost's comments about a weighted average. I think Congress inherently said one is per se not representative, Your Honor. And so you have to have more than one in order to satisfy that. Also, Your Honors, with respect to the representative question, which is a subsidiary issue, we pointed out that we actually provided Commerce Department with data showing that Jun Hong was not representative. The Commerce Department decided not to address that data at all. And so, number one, you have to have two or more, and then secondarily, they refused to look at the data that we proffered showing that the one company they did rely upon was not representative. And so for all those reasons, Your Honors, we do request that this court reverse and remand to the Commerce Department. If there's no further questions, Your Honors, thank you very much.
Any more questions for counsel? Anything else? Okay, thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under submission.